How's it going, everybody? Bryan Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were off last week. It was WrestleMania weekend. I know, bad time to be off, but I was actually down there in Phoenix for WrestleMania. I saw the big show. I watched two ROH events and a Dragon Gate USA event. And so we're going to be talking about all of that here on today's show. And it's a very special show. It's not only Easter Sunday, and how great is it that you're all spending your Easter Sunday listening to this program here, but we've got a very special guest on the program today. He's been the co-host before on several occasions, Lance Storm. However, today he's in studio, live here. He's taking a trip down to Seattle from his home in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. There was a Tulalip Championship Wrestling show, and he appeared to do a seminar. We'll talk about that. And, of course, the show later on that evening. We'll talk some notes on that, but spend most of the time here talking about all of the news in pro wrestling, and there is a lot of it. If you guys want to hear more stories about Lance's trip down here, we'll be talking about that this coming Thursday on Figure 4 Daily, which is up at WrestlingObserver.com. But on today's show, we got so much news that's pretty much going to dominate the conversation here. We'll, of course, talk the WrestleMania show last week. We'll talk Raw and Impact. The ratings from this past Monday night were very, very poor for TNA. Very dour numbers. We'll talk about those and what that means leading into tomorrow's shows. We'll talk about the UFC pay-per-view, the destruction of Frank Mir at the hands of Shane Carwin. We're going to be joined soon here by Mike Sempervivi. He was at that show live, so he'll be talking about that and all of the other stuff that went on at UFC. We've, of course, got sad news to talk about. Many of you have probably heard by now that the former Canyon, Chris Kluseritis, has passed away, and we'll talk about his life. Lance worked with him in WCW, and I think for a while in WWE as well, so we'll talk to him about that. He's got some stories, and we'll talk about the life of Canyon, and of course, all of the other news as well. There's plenty of it, no shortage. Take your phone calls and emails as well, as always, and all of that here in the next 2 hours. So we'll get the show kicked off here in just a moment. Emails, phone calls, news, and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Bryan Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined today live in studio by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com. Straight from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Two of us here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Taking your phone calls, talking all sorts of news, including the WrestleMania weekend last Sunday. And Lance, unfortunately, we got to start off with some sad news here. The death of Chris Canyon, who apparently passed away an overdose of pills, it's looking like. We don't have a whole lot of details, but that was the latest information that we had. And you worked with him both in WCW and WWE. And what memories do you have of Canyon?
Yeah, I worked with him the year I was in WCW and probably the year of the invasion. I don't think he was there much longer than that. He was a lot of fun. I always got along really well with Chris. We didn't always see eye to eye ring psychology wise because we tagged a few times, and I know I've had at least one match against him, but we always had a lot of fun. He really liked working hard. He was doing the Positively Canyon gimmick, doing the ripoff of Diamond Dallas Page when Dallas was away. So he was diamond cutting everybody in WCW when I was there. And then I did, I think, two or three tags with him when we were doing the invasion stuff in WWE. So he was a lot of fun to be around, a lot of fun to work with.
Now, when you guys did stuff together, I mean, one of the things about Canyon that people always remember is he always came up with new moves. And I know that, like, in 2010, when you think about moves, it's kind of almost like it's almost kind of a negative thing. Like, God, did you see all the moves in that match? You know what I mean? But he came up with a lot of stuff that was innovative, and he still managed to have really good matches. It wasn't like they were just spot fests of moves and that sort of thing. I mean, he was kind of able to work them into matches. And I mean, when you guys were working together, either as a tag team or working against him, I mean, did he often come up with a lot of different ideas, like look at stuff you did and thought, I bet I could turn this into some sort of move?
I don't think it went that far because we didn't work together that much. But actually, the one disagreement we had on a psychology issue was over a move he wanted to do that I refused to let him.
What's that?
He had some kind of, you know, blocking a hip toss and turning some kind of neck breaker out of it.
Oh, yeah. I've seen he used to do that all the time.
That he wanted to do as a false finish post his comeback. And he says, yeah, so when you cut me off, you need to send me in and give me a hip toss. I'm like, no. He's like, well, I got this really great counter for it. I'm like, I don't care. Lance Storm would not be throwing a hip toss at this point in time in a match. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And again, I wasn't that adamant about it, and he was a cool guy, so it didn't turn into a fight, but I'm just like, I would not do that. I've got this great counter. I'm like, I don't care. I would not be doing that move here. We're not doing it. So we did something else, but it's, again, I don't like the, oh, I want to get this move in. To me, it's got to fit the match, and in that instance, I didn't think the move fit the match, so to me, if you're going to counter a hip toss, it better be early, because I'm not throwing one late.
Now, what was, I mean, I don't know if you know any story about this or not, but I mean, he was not a main event or anything like that in WCW, but he was a pretty, I mean, he was used a lot. He was in a lot of, you talked about the Positively Canyon deal that he did, and you know, I think that most people that watched WCW during that period, they remember him probably pretty vividly. And then he came to WWE, and it didn't work out. I mean, what was it that they did not see in him? Was it the look? I mean, did you ever?
I think part of it was the getting stamped with the he's a move guy. But on the whole, in the invasion, I thought they were pretty happy with him, because there was a lot of guys that came in that they weren't happy with their work. You know, there was a lot of issues with guys not bumping the way they wanted to, not feeding the way they wanted to, that didn't adapt well enough to the WWE style. And in Canyon, I thought, was in one of the, you know, the minority of the group that they were happy with his work. I just remember he got hurt and blew his knee out at one point in time. And that's when they were, you know, I think the invasion wasn't going particularly well or was wrapping up. And they had the list of guys that, you know, really should have been sent back to developmental, a lot of the power plant guys. And I think Canyon, when I was on the list of guys, they would think of something to do. But when they did the, you're all fired for the invasion, and then he's off hurt, I think it just got to the point where, well, he's off the show now. Do we really need to bother to bring him back? And I think it sort of was really poor timing with the injury. And none of us from the invasion had the world's greatest stamp put on our forehead as being people that they were thrilled to death with. I think they were quite happy with me and probably happy with Booker. But other than that, they had a lot of looking for mistakes rather than being happy with what you had.
Didn't they have, weren't there a lot of weird little things that, like, nobody would ever think about? Like, you know, some guys would take a bump on every punch before the comeback, and in WWE it was like, we want you to take two punches and bump on the third. Was there a lot of little things like that where if you did it the wrong way, they stamped you as being unable to work?
Yeah, there was a lot of very rigid, I don't recall that one specifically, but yeah, you were sort of expected to bump a certain way. And again, even just on a comeback where if it was, you know, you take three bumps, you know, on a bump and feed starting your comeback, but, you know, you did four.
Yeah.
You just have no idea how to work. If it's two, you're an idiot. If it's four, you're an idiot. It's three. And, you know, that's obviously a little bit too rigid. But I think it was a situation where there was so much animosity for these guys are WCW. And then there was a few guys like Buff had a ton of heat and everything else that I think we were looked at where it's like, okay, what's wrong with this guy rather than what's right with this guy?
Yeah.
So if they could find anything, and it's like, well, he's a little bit too heavy into his moves, and then he got hurt, and it's like, boy, this guy's just a pain in the ass. And it's like, well, really, he got hurt and does more moves than you like. It's not the end of the world.
Actually, it's funny you mention that, because I remember when Benoit first came in and he had that match with Triple H, Hunter, after the match, I can't remember the exact phrase, but it was something to the effect of, you know, we can teach this guy how to work. It was some just completely absurd statement that basically sums all that up. If you did not work this rigid WWE style, there was something wrong with what you were doing. And yeah. I could see if they had this stamp on Benoit, then poor Canyon going in there and doing a bunch of different moves and that sort of thing, I can see them stamping him as he's a move guy.
Yeah, there's the old analogy that wrestling's like ice cream. There's a lot of different flavors, but when you get to WWE, if they happen to be big on strawberry that day and you're serving up a different flavor, you don't know how to work.
Yeah.
And realistically speaking, you know, Benoit knew how to work several different styles. He just had to fine-tune the one that they wanted. But, so I could see Canyon getting hit with that. You know, Mike Awesome also got hit with that because he was so used to being the big guy that did a lot of moves and threw guys. And all of a sudden he's in there with Kane and Taker where he's not big enough to be throwing them and they're not going to get thrown. That it was hard to adjust to the style that they specifically wanted at the time.
It also, when you mentioned strawberry and the flavor of the month, it can be confusing, I'm sure, to guys, because this flavor changes. Like you, what were we talking about today where Vince had a pet peeve about some aspect of working? What the hell was it?
I don't remember.
We were just talking about this.
Yeah, but I do remember Pat Patterson was the one that first hit me with the ice cream analogy. And he's like, you know, one day Vince likes chocolate. The other day, vanilla. But he always buys the ice cream. And that's the thing. He's buying it, so you got to serve him the flavor that he wants that day.
The enziguri.
Ah, yes, the enziguri.
Yeah.
But apparently now you're not allowed to catch the foot and hold it to get hit with an enziguri because it looks too fake.
Yeah.
If you do the step kick that Jericho does, that's perfectly fine. And I think there's a lot in wrestling that's done that way, that guys get lazy and they, you know, they throw up this kick that doesn't even look like it's a kick. It's the, hey, catch my foot. And it just looks like you're trying to get them to catch your foot.
Yeah.
And I could see that, you know, when it's done really poorly, Vince could see it and go, that's crap. I don't want that on my show.
Yeah.
But there are ways that you can make that enziguri look proper if you pay attention to detail.
I just wanted to, before we wrap this segment up, I just wanted to say that I know that there are a lot of people, some of you probably listening right now, that were friends with Canyon. And I actually think that Canyon was the first guy that I talked to regularly when I started doing this in the mid-90s. He was a really, really nice guy. And unfortunately, he had a lot of problems, depression, just a lot of other different issues. And he'd been talking about it apparently of late that he was going through more of this. And anybody listening right now that was friends with him, we're very, very sorry to have to report this. But I'm sure most of you know already. But it always sucks. It always sucks. And it's like, I don't know. We were kind of talking about this earlier. We'll talk about it a little bit later on in the show. But I do kind of think that this is going to slow down a little bit, because I think that the guys here in 2010, there are obviously still problems, don't get me wrong, but they are living a very, very different lifestyle in a lot of ways than these guys who came up in WCW I shouldn't even say WCW, WWE, WCW, and ECW in the mid-90s was a very different time than it is today, and we'll talk more about that later on in the show, but we have to head to a break. We're going to come back in just a moment with Mike Sempervive talking UFC. He was there last weekend. We'll talk about the big matches there and the show coming up this weekend as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com and Mike Sempervive, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk last weekend's UFC pay-per-view. It was 111 from Newark, I believe. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes, that is correct. They can't get into New York City, so they got to play Brick City right outside of it.
Now, how did Newark do? Because I know that I went to, God, I forget who was, Rashad Evans was headlining against somebody in Newark, and I remember going to that show. It's like 2007, and I remember it didn't do quite as well as they thought it would do in the New York market. How did this one do?
This one sold out. There was 17,000 with a $4 million gate. The thing that seemed to really hurt Newark is it's a little bit of a smaller building. Like going to see the show in Philadelphia last August, I think it was. It's just a far bigger arena. They have video boards set up, and the UFC lost a lot of room, actually, because they actually had to put up, you know, big screen TVs, which kind of blocked some things off. But it was, you know, it was a very hot crowd. It was a very loud crowd, especially in the case of George St. Pierre and Frank Mir. So, you know, they did get their money's worth out of it that way, as far as the crowd was electric, even though, you know, ultimately at the end of the night, the show kind of left some things to be desired.
Yeah, the main event was George St. Pierre and Dan Hardy, which was interesting, not in the sense that Dan Hardy won, because he didn't. I think everybody expected that he was going to be beaten, but I think most people expected him to be slaughtered. And he went in there and lasted five rounds. He was put in a lot of near submissions. He escaped every single one. And tell us about the fight, and then tell us a little bit about how afterwards, in the post-fight press conference, they asked George St. Pierre about Dan Hardy getting out of these. And I guess the question was kind of, you know, were you being merciful? You just didn't want to break the guy's arm? And what St. Pierre's response was?
You know, it almost seemed that way. I mean, GSP just, it's the problem you have right now. I mean, he is so great at what he does, but the only thing that Dan Hardy could possibly have done to win that fight is, you know, throw bombs, which he attempted to do. St. Pierre, knowing this, wasn't going to give him that opportunity. Although, frankly, on their feet, I mean, obviously Hardy's got some pop, but I'm not, you know, convinced that GSP couldn't have stand up there and traded with him quite well, you know, just as well. But GSP did what he had to do, which was consistently take him down, and basically just he worked for submissions. And, you know, the work that Dan Hardy did, obviously it was set up through Dana White that Hardy was going to train with Matt Serra, but they did bring it up during the third version of 24/7 that he constantly trained for five rounds to get out of submissions, and he was very successful in doing that. Afterwards, and if you look at the fight, the people that saw the fight, it almost looks like GSP is being sporting in a way that he somehow was not able to put Hardy away with those submissions. Now, after the fight, you know, he claimed it was just a matter of technique and said, you know, in camp, you know, there are guys, you put these moves on guys, you know, these arm bars, and they're going to tap because obviously you don't want to get hurt during training. So he had that, and just the fact that he is blaming his technique, although I got to be honest, I wouldn't fall over shocked if one day he came out and said I was being sporting about it and didn't want to break his arm. But you got to give, I mean, it's amazing that he has that kind of performance. He's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, arguably, in any sort of combat sport. Yet Hardy's stock was the one that rose and GSP's dropped. I mean, I had GSP winning 4 10-8 rounds. I mean, that's how dominant he was. But by the fifth round, people were booing him because of the style that he was using, which was the all-wrestling, all-the-time style, which is frankly driving people nuts.
Well, did he mention anything about the possibility of going out for the Olympic team this year or in 2012?
They were downplaying that big time during the week. He wasn't asked that afterwards at the press conference, but they were really putting the kibosh on that during the week. Although, you know, if you saw the fight, he would actually be perfect for it. And in a way, it would actually be a great, great thing for amateur wrestling if he were to go ahead and do that. Just, you know, as far as the UFC's concerned, that obviously they don't want him to do it. Although it opens up that welterweight division, which, you know, the UFC's in a weird situation where, you know, of their five champions, three of them are almost unbeatable. And you have BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar coming up. And, you know, you saw what BJ Penn did to Kenny Florian, who is arguably the second best guy in that division. So, you know, they're in a weird spot where they have basically all the talent in the world outside of, you know, 10 guys that don't fight for them and fight for somebody else. All the talent's in the UFC. Yet their champions are so dominant that it's, you know, it's going to create some problems, I think, if these guys don't start having super fights.
Now, Lance and I didn't get a chance to see the main event, but we did see Frank Mir and Shane Carwin. And Lance is giggling right now. Lance, your thoughts on that battle?
It was pretty impressive. You know, I think there's a lot of people that weren't sure if, you know, Shane Carwin was as good as his record showed, and boy, did he show it. He's got some power, and he's a pretty scary dude. As much as I enjoy seeing Brock punch Frank in the face, I'm actually really intrigued by this fight.
Now, how was the fight live there, Mike?
Oh, it was awesome. It was amazing at the weigh-in. They had a massive amount of people for the weigh-in, and as soon as Frank Mir came out, the place absolutely exploded. Just with the exception of GSP and the screaming fans that he has, I mean, it was absolutely unbelievable. And you knew Mir was going to be huge. This has been one of his big goals since losing to Lesnar, is I got to get big. You know, the surprise there was seeing Carwin, who looked like he didn't work out with weights at all in his training. He was very slim, and it was like, well, wow, this is, you know, kind of an interesting look. We'll see what happens here. And he immediately bullied Mir up against the cage, and then obviously it wasn't much longer after that, about, you know, 3 minutes into the fight, where, you know, those six uppercuts he threw against the fence were, you know, that laid Mir out and then just pounded away on him before it was finally stopped. I mean, it was an incredibly impressive performance. And coming off the heels of Cain Velasquez knocking out, you know, Nogueira, who looked like he was in the best shape he's been in several years. I mean, the UFC went from being laughed at in 2002 of having no heavyweight fighters whatsoever to having a real embarrassment of riches between those two guys, Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos.
Now, what would you predict as far as Brock and Shane Carwin? Because I've thought about it, and it's just, I mean, again, you talk about the record. Is it now 11-0 after this, or is it 12? Regardless, he's run through everybody. Every fight, the ending has been via punching the dude repeatedly. No fight going more than a round. But, I mean, even with that said, we still have no idea what happens when this guy goes into round two. We know Brock can go three rounds, but can Brock avoid getting punched in the face? Can he take the guy down? Can he hold the guy down for three rounds? I mean, I don't know enough about Shane Carwin to be able to predict this fight.
Well, and that's a big problem there. Yeah, I mean, he's had 12 fights, and they've gone all of 14 minutes now. And as impressive as, the win over Mir was, he's got the bigger, badder version of himself in Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
He was D2 national champion. Lesnar was a D1 national champion. They list Carwin at 6'5". That was a running joke throughout the week, too. And then you have Brock go out there and just towers over him. Until somebody is able to lay a couple punches on Brock and somehow hurt him and be able to, outmaneuver him wrestling-wise, until that happens, you cannot bet against Brock Lesnar, and especially not with Carwin, although it's going to be interesting with this being Brock's first fight coming back in July where they have this thing tentatively scheduled. It's going to be interesting to see how much the diverticulitis took out of him and how he's going to look. So Carwin could be catching him in the best possible spot, but until he actually goes out there and does it, I'm not going to believe it.
Brock did look jolly this weekend.
Yeah, he seemed to be, and Dana White afterwards said that he's become a more thankful, a more, forward-thinking Brock as far as himself and his attitude. Which, completely goes against everybody in the media room and saying, well, no, Brock is still the same old Brock.
Now, the show coming up this weekend, we've got a couple of minutes here to preview this. It is, as noted, BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar, which, I don't know, Dan Hardy went five rounds with George St. Pierre, so I guess anything's possible. I would be surprised if Frankie Edgar beat BJ Penn. I'd actually, frankly, be surprised if anybody at 155 beat BJ Penn. But that is, I guess, the three top fights. Matt Hughes and Henzo Gracie, which it's like a really interesting fight because Henzo's like 43. He hasn't fought at a top level in God knows how long. He had the win over Frank Shamrock, but it was because Frank screwed up. And Matt Hughes, I didn't even remember the last time he fought. It's been at least a year. When was the last time he fought? It's been a while. And just kind of two old guys just having a grudge match. Henzo's trying to avenge the loss of Hoyce Gracie when Hughes kind of beat the crap out of him. And then, of course, the main event, Silva and Maya. We've got a guy whose stand-up kind of sucks against a guy who doesn't appear to be taken down very easily, whose stand-up is the best in the division. That one looks to go like a minute, maybe, if he's lucky.
It's going to be a slaughter of knees and elbows that will probably end relatively early in the first round. It just seemed to be that the Hughes-Henzo fight was just, maybe the people who bought in Abu Dhabi just decided, we want to see this. Because that's the only thing I can come up with. Although,
after seeing
Henzo work the crowd at the UFC show, I do have to say that they need him all the time to just go around and like run up and down the building and fire people up because he was working it great and seemed to love every absolute minute of it. The best fight on there, is Penn and Edgar. And again, I mean, you saw what BJ Penn did to Kenny Florian in his last fight, and Florian's the second best guy in the division. And as good as Frankie Edgar's wrestling is, and as popular as he is, as long as he doesn't lose anything in this, it's going to be fine. But again with BJ Penn, just like with GSP and with Anderson Silva, until somebody beats him, you got to just go with him.
Mike, stay on the line here. We're going to keep you on for the next segment. We'll talk talk a little bit about WrestleMania as well, get your thoughts on that. We've got a lot to talk about there. And talk a little bit more about this card as well. There's a little bit more to chat about here. So we'll hold you on the line for that, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com and Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. If you love this show and you're only hearing it once per week, first off, go to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. There's a list of our latest free radio shows. I think there's five of them up right now. So that's like 6-7 hours of audio that you can listen to absolutely free. And if you like what you hear, consider signing up. It's $10.99 a month, and we do a radio show pretty much every single day. We've got, I think, 6 or 7 regularly producing radio shows. I, of course, do Figure Four Daily 3 or 4 days a week. Lance is on this coming Thursday. He does a show bi-weekly with us on Figure Four Daily. Mike, of course, does the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, and a ton of other shows covering historical wrestling, MMA, pro wrestling nowadays, pretty much everything you can think of. Just head over there, WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, and check out the latest five free radio shows. And again, if you like what you hear, and you've got, say, a commute, or you've got an iPod, and you love to listen to stuff at the gym, we will we'll give you more than you can handle. I can just tell you that. So, get back to the news here. We'll wrap up the talk of UFC 112. Mike, any other thoughts on any of those matches on the show, including the Silva-Maia fight, which doesn't seem to sound like it's much of a fight at all?
No, and that's, I just see Silva cutting him to pieces. The undercard, it's not like it's loaded up with a whole lot. Kendall Grove is fighting on there, Dos Anjos and Needham, which, you know, for the 155-pound division, they had to have a fight. I'm, you know, kind of surprised they didn't break out Diego Sanchez or somebody like that to have on there, too. And, you know, even no matter who wins that fight, they're still going to have a real hard climb in that 155-pound class. So, you know, it's really, you know, as far as the meat and potatoes of the thing, it's really a one-fight card. But it's going to be interesting to see how the setup is and everything, because as over the top as the concert arena looks in Dubai, this ought to be something.
Now, I was going to save the ROH talk for later, and I still may, but did you get a chance to see the pay-per-view tonight?
No, unfortunately, I was traveling, so I didn't get a chance to see it yet, although I'm really looking forward to it. Apparently, there were some really good matches on there.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later on, but we're going to chat about WrestleMania now. I think that's what a lot of people want to hear about that didn't get a chance to listen to the show last week, since it was, in fact, a replay. Lance, you, I don't like to keep harping on the fact, but 20% on your predictions. 20%!
Yeah, you can certainly tell I didn't have any inside information, because I got almost everything wrong.
Yeah. Including Michaels and Undertaker.
Yeah, that was... I think I went more with the long shot, figuring I'm going to seem like a genius if I get this right. And if I get it wrong, it's like, well, I'm probably going to be wrong at a bunch of other matches too, so who cares? So I took the long shot, and I came up short.
Now, you just watched the show the other day on pay-per-view Thursday, in fact. So you managed to avoid spoilers for 5 days, which is astounding, really. And what did you think of the show as a whole?
I thought it was fantastic. I haven't seen too many of the recent Manias. I watched 24, which was Shawn and Flair. Missed last year's and then caught this year's. And I thought it was really solid. Like, with the exception of Brett and Vince and the Divas, I thought all the matches were good and solid. I have no idea what happened with Brett and Vince. I'm dumbfounded,
no,
but I thought every match was solid to really good, and of course Taker and Shawn was fantastic. Other than a few guys would have been great if they could have had more time, most notably Punk and Rey Mysterio, because I'm watching going, it's fine, but it just seems to be missing something, and I realize it's like, damn, it's over already.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because, you know, those guys can be fantastic. Jericho and Edge could have had a little bit more time. But on the whole, I thought it was a fantastic show and really enjoyed it.
So you haven't seen last year's Michaels Undertaker yet?
I have not.
My God, I've got it on DVD here. We should have watched it.
I've got it on DVD. I just haven't had the time to sit down and watch it.
Oh, okay. Mike, your thoughts on the show?
Yeah, I pretty much thought the same thing. I kind of wish the opening tag match, even though it was, you know, to see Miz out there, as that was, it seemed to be the greatest moment of his life, was actually coming out for WrestleMania. I really wish that match would have been pushed back until before the show, and they could have, you know, added the 3 minutes to Punk and Mysterio. I understand the point of that, considering it's going to be going on for a while, or at least past WrestleMania, so I do understand that. But I do wish there was a little bit more time for most of those matches, although they could have really shaved down, obviously, Vince and Bret, and that went on for way, way too long, and they could have used some of that time elsewhere as well. But I really like the show a lot, you know, outside of that, and obviously outside the Divas' fluff match, too. And so good, we had to see it on Monday night as well. I really liked it, although, you know, my biggest problem with it, the announcing, you know, on ABC Sports, when it comes time to do a major bowl game, Keith Jackson, they'll still have him come out and do a match or to do a game. And to have Jim Ross there, I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense that on WrestleMania, he can't call WrestleMania that day. I mean, you can't put your best foot forward. You're doing it in so many other ways. It makes no sense, especially because, and again, they're probably all nice guys. They're all so bad right now, it's not even funny.
Lance nearly had a conniption there when you mentioned Ross not on the show and the announcing.
Yeah, because I don't think it's fair to say the other guys are bad. It's just JR is in a league of his own. It's like he really is the 15 out of 10. So even if the other guys are an 8 out of 10, they're only half as good as him.
Yeah.
And the Undertaker, Shawn Michaels match in particular, it's just that extra emotion. And a really great announcer can, you know, add that extra bit and make a good match great or a great match, you know, memorable. And it really, really showed at how good he was when he wasn't there. It really sucked some of the emotion out of the matches.
Hope the FCC doesn't get on us for you right there, Lance. Go ahead, Mike.
See, and it's obviously not their fault or anything, but I mean, like, Matt Stryker started off on ECW really well, and they just, I mean, I don't want to say terrible, but he's pretty terrible.
He's really
bad. It's not these guys' fault, and it's just amazing. And when they do so many other things as far as the aesthetics so incredibly well, why wouldn't you want the best guy on the planet, you know, to bring everything home? It just absolutely makes no sense.
Yeah, Stryker, I haven't seen the show on DVD or DVR or anything yet. It was great live, let me tell you. I mean, the best part about the show, watching the show live, I mean, we didn't have the announcers to annoy me or anything like that. Brett Vince was pretty much just as horrendous. I can't even imagine the commentary for Brett versus Vince. What could they possibly have even been talking about? Wasn't Lawler starting to say this was starting to get uncomfortable? Didn't he throw that line in there?
I really have no recollection of anything they said during that match, because I think I was just sitting there dumbfounded, because yeah. I had high hopes for it. I just assumed that Brett has always been so fantastic and always had so much pride in his match. I just assumed they had a game plan going in that was going to work somehow, and this one unfortunately didn't work.
That's for sure. Yeah, the show live was great because, I mean, the building, the University of Phoenix Stadium, it opened in 2006. So, I mean, this place is brand new. And you got to remember that, like, you know, I was at the Citrus Bowl. Jesus, that place was a dump. So I come here, and it's like, the building's beautiful. It's so clean inside. They've got the retractable roof. They've got the WWE set. They had this, basically created a pyramid over the ring. And they had some sort of hologram gizmo. I don't even know what it was. You guys all saw it better on TV than I did, but it sure did look cool from a distance. And the big ramp and everything like that. And it's just kind of one of those things where I always feel that, like, if you've never been to a WrestleMania, you just don't know. I mean, especially, like, nowadays where WrestleMania, like, if you look back at early WrestleManias, I mean, everybody remembers WrestleMania 3 with Hogan and Andre. But I mean, there was like WrestleMania 2 and some of these WrestleManias, WrestleMania 9. I mean, there have been some horrendous WrestleManias. Nowadays, it's like, this is so far and away their biggest event of the year. I mean, if you look at domestic buys for your average show, you know, maybe a couple hundred thousand buys in the U.S., and this one's going to do maybe 6 and over a million around the world. I mean, this is their big, giant show of the year, and they pull out all the stops live, and it's really so cool. I mean, it's just one of those deals where, like, the first half of this show, live, really was not very good. I mean, a lot of the matches, they had their time cut. They, you know, just, they were very average matches early on. There wasn't any 4-star match or anything like that till we got to Batista and Cena. But because it was such a cool event, it was almost like if the entire show had been matches like that, all the fans live would have gone home happy. Just to have experienced that. I mean, obviously the two main events helped, but it's just a really cool thing to be there. If any of you listening have never been to WrestleMania, I really recommend going out of your way to going there, because it's just like, it's the state of the art for a live event nowadays. Mike, obviously you go to you go to more sporting events than I do. But, I mean, is there really anything that compares to the look of these shows?
No. Really, there's absolutely nothing that does. And we're talking to Gary Stoke, who's the president of the Atlanta Sports Council. And between the revenue that's brought in and the image that WrestleMania has now, I mean, even if you don't like wrestling, you know, at least you go, okay, it's WrestleMania. And that's why, you know, you get so many random buys and why it's going to do so well this year, because people who don't care all year round will pull out the money for this one show. And they do such a fantastic job, again, with the looks of everything and how they change up the sets from year to year and doing all of this new stuff. It really is remarkable, and they keep adding stuff on during the week. You know, in addition to all the charity stuff that they do and the art stuff and all those sorts of things, those continue to build on too, where that's why they have so many cities fighting over WrestleMania, because just all the revenue and the stuff that it brings in.
Now, Lance, we've talked about this before on other shows, but of course Mania came to Seattle and you guys got bumped to the dark match. And obviously for revenue purposes, that sucks. But what was it like being able to go out there in front of all those people? And, I mean, really, Safeco Field WrestleMania, I don't even think the production was anything in the realm of what they do nowadays. But it was still a very well-produced show in front of a hell of a lot of people.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I don't know if they use the slogan anymore, but when I was a fan, it was, you know, WrestleMania, it's a happening. And it really is.
Yes, it is.
And you know, whether you're... Because I've been to three as a fan. Excuse me. I've been to three as a fan, and then I worked at two of them. I was the dark match at WrestleMania 18 at the Sky Dome, and then, you know, 19 in Seattle. And it really is amazing, because the stage is bigger, the scenery is bigger, the emotion is bigger, and it really is quite amazing, and it's a real thrill to work. But yeah, when you get bumped that 30 minutes earlier, and they take a zero off your paycheck, it really, really stinks.
You know, we were asked that on the show, actually, and you'd be the perfect person to ask. I mean, you don't have to reveal this if you don't want to. I think you actually have in the past, but I forget. But, I mean, what is the difference between on Mania and Dark Match?
Well, again, I've never actually been on the Mania, so I don't know for sure. But I've talked to enough guys that, you know, this is kind of the paycheck you mean. And, yeah, it's really anywhere from, you know, $2,500 to $5,000 to be the Dark Match to anywhere from, you know, 10 to 50 grand to be on the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and actually 10's probably really low.
And I was going to say, in the 50, when you're talking the main eventers, Cena and Batista and Undertaker and
Well, that's
Shawn.
Obviously bigger. I'm just talking about being, you know, you're in the tag match or you're in the six-man and you get bumped from, you know, one match to the other. Like, well, again, the Show Miz match, if it got bumped, you know, there's a chance of them dropping from, you know, I guess with this being as big, it could be, you know, a $25,000 or a $30,000 paycheck to a 5 or a 10.
Yeah.
And actually, if the buy rate's big enough, it could be bigger than that. So it is a really big difference, considering you did the work all year to cut the angle. You're still there that day. You're still putting on your gear and going out and having that match. You just do it less and you get paid a lot less. It really stinks.
We'll talk about this a little bit more after the break. Mike, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today. Really appreciate it. And we'll have you back on next Sunday and do 2 hours.
Yes, sir.
And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.
Put 7 this morning.
We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com. We got a short segment here, so I thought we'd take a quick email question. We've got several of them here. This person here has a question for you. It has little to do with anything, but... This is our friend Odessa, who always has to ask a question that's just... I'm baffled. He has a chance to go to Calgary next month. Should he stay in Banff or Lake Louise?
I've never actually been to Lake Louise, but you really can't go wrong either way. I've heard Lake Louise is absolutely beautiful. Banff is amazing, too. Probably, if you're going, I would probably say go to Lake Louise.
I have nothing against Odessa. I love him, but...
This is Wrestling Observer Live.
Well, no, it's just like, you know, let's say we have a million people listening. We're now talking about Banff and Lake Louise. Come on now. All right, let's do another one here very quickly. This person says, just curious, are you guys sure that TNA is supposed to be competing with Raw? Looking at the rating, one would think they're competing with AM Raw.
Wow.
Actually, AM Raw, I think, beat them. I'm almost positive AM Raw beat Impact this past Monday night.
The Fireplace Channel may have beaten them.
We'll talk about Impact here after a while. I don't want to get your dander up here. But, we're going to have to talk about that. But yes, Impact has been doing poorly, everybody. It's a very sad state of affairs. This person here says, what's the attitude in Japan towards drugs? They're a bunch of jacked up guys, but you'll hear about them ODing like they do here. Just curious how the attitudes differ, especially since these guys work through some crazy injuries. Thanks for the info. Actually, Lance, you've worked in Japan quite a bit. We don't have time here, but we'll head to our hourly break. And when we come back, we'll address this question, and then we'll get into all of the other news from the week and take more of your email questions and perhaps some phone calls as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined, as noted earlier, Lance Storm, stormwrestling.com, straight from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. He is in studio today. We're talking all sorts of news. Talked WrestleMania in the prior segment. We'll probably talk about that more a little bit later on in the show. Got an email question about drugs in Japan. Lance has got a lot to say, so we're actually going to wait until the next lengthy segment to talk about that. This one's short, so just very quickly, we'll talk a little bit about NXT this week, since there ain't much to talk about, Lance. They ranked some dudes, they did some matches, and then we moved on with our lives. What'd you think of the show?
It was actually the first full episode of NXT I saw, and in theory, I liked the concept, but this week's show was just... They ranked some dudes that didn't actually matter, because it didn't result in anything, and then there was just 8 regular guys having a tag match, and then a battle royal... And battle royals always stink. And this one was no exception. So it was a really... Boy, that was a show. And we're done.
I'm very sad. Hopefully the video appears soon. But our mutual friend, Young Vincent, Brian's friend Vinny, was in the battle royal in Tulalip last night. And apparently there was a spot where someone threw an Easter egg at him and he took a bump. So, besides exposing the business, he was involved in a terrible battle royal, I'm sure. And after I managed to get him booked on the show, he didn't even win.
Well, he may have exposed the business long before the egg was thrown.
I was going to say, he actually... The fact that he got in the ring was kind of an exposure of the business right there. But we don't like to talk about Vinny behind his back. But you know how things are. So, yeah, we're going to head to the break here, but as noted, we've got a lot of news to talk about here today. We'll talk about Raw and Impact. Last week's head-to-head battle, it's getting sad. It was actually sad on day one, but it's getting sadder with each passing day. We'll talk about that, and we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about as well. We watched SmackDown. We'll chit-chat about that. And ROH, there was an injury at the ROH show this evening, so we'll... talk about that, get into some more news, and more. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com. And Lance, before we get into the question about Japan, how's the school been going?
School's been going really well. Continue to get good interest. I've still got a little bit of opening in my May spot. I think I've got one. I've got a session starting in May, and then September, obviously, there's still some space. But I still really enjoy it, and I've got a really good bunch of guys. Had more people drop out this session than in previous sessions, but those who finished had some potential, and it was a really good time.
We're going to talk more about training here in a little while, because I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the stuff you talked about in your seminar last night in Tulalip. But the question was attitudes about drugs in Japan. You see a lot of guys that are jacked up, but you don't hear a lot about ODs and that sort of thing. And you work there, obviously. And what is the attitude in Japan on drugs?
Well, at least when I was there, because it was, you know, would have been late 90s that I was, mid to late 90s that I was working in Japan. I think there's two things that make it different. I don't think they're as big into recreational drugs and the pain pills. So if they're big jacked up dudes, that's one vice. And I really think one of the pitfalls is combinations. I think it's the guys that drink and do pain pills and do steroids and do, you know, whatever, that when you start getting that many checks in the negative column, it compounds, and that's when guys end up, you know, dropping dead or having real issues. And I think also, too, the Japanese schedule is so much easier on your body, because they do, you know, at least back in the day, you know, All Japan was the worst, where they'd have the 5-week tour where everybody come over and they'd work their ass off for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they'd get 3 or 4 weeks of downtime. And when you've got little nagging injuries, they can be healed in that time. But when you're on, and again, the 80s, schedule with WWE where you're, you know, 30 days on, you get 2 days off, 45 days on, you get 4 days off, and you do that year round, year after year, you never give your body a chance to get the little things to heal. So they're always going to become big things. And if you're just continually masking to, I got to get through another month, I've got to get through another month, eventually you break. And I think that's when guys get dependent on stuff. But if you only have to get through the next 3 weeks and you get a month off, it gives you that opportunity to not get hooked and not turn it into a problem. And if you cannot compound it with pain pills and anti-inflammatories and alcohol and steroids, it just becomes a compounded issue. And I think that's where a lot of the Japanese have fortunately been able to avoid a lot of the pitfalls that the North American guys have had.
Now, obviously, the schedule today is a hell of a lot easier than it was in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, you mentioned, okay, you got a five-week tour and then, you know, 3 or 4 weeks off or whatever, and it gives you time to heal those injuries. But even nowadays, on a schedule where guys are on the road, I mean, you hear guys nowadays talking about how, you know, I'm on the road 300 days a year, and if you actually add up the number of house shows, guys are working about 140 house shows a year. I mean, you're on the road a little more because you've got the travel days and that sort of thing, but you're actually only working about 140 days, and it's still, however, four on, three off. So is that enough time to, I mean, it's significantly less days, but still you get home on a Thursday and you're back on the road on a Sunday. I mean, it would seem like you even then don't get a lot of time to heal those nagging injuries.
It is hard, yeah. When you're, you know, 4 days a week, you're looking at, you know, maybe 200 days a year, which is a lot because you don't get the break. But if you're careful and smart, it is enough. But you still have to be able to say, I need time off. And I think the age-old theory of, I can't take time off, I'll lose my spot. If you really pay attention, that's not the case. You know, if you look at Edge, when he took time off for the broken neck, he came back to probably a better push than he had before he left. When he took time off for the Achilles tendon recently, he came back right back in his spot. So I think if you are a top guy or you know, someone that's being used, saying, I need time off isn't the end of the world, and the office will actually give it to you. They might not be happy about it, and they may try to talk you out of it, but you can get it if you need it. And I think the guys that are smart enough, and fortunately there's getting to be more guys that are smart enough, that, you know, take some time. You know, I think Taker's taken some time after Mania, and, you know, if there's anybody that's earned it, it's certainly him. You've got to put your health first and decide that, yeah, I can go another month. Yeah, I can go another month. No, I can't. I need some time off if you need it. And so you don't get into that vicious cycle of depending on medications or alcohol or what have you to get through your 4 days to get to those 2 days off. And then really, you know, WWE takes really good care of their guys. You know, they've got doctors and trainers, you know, you've got your medical room and stuff. They take really good care of you. They get massage guys there. They get chiropractors there. If you're smart, it's a tiring schedule, but you can put up with it.
Now, when you say that, that is the case if you're the Undertaker or the big stars, but it still does seem Jack Swagger actually is kind of a bad example because he just won the world title. But I mean, prior to Thursday, I mean, I would still think that if you're a guy like Jack Swagger, who they're kind of doing something with, but not really, and he's the kind of guy, it would seem to me like if he took time off for an injury, he legitimately might lose his spot. Because he's in that area where if you disappear and come back, people aren't like, oh my God, Jack Swagger's back. Like with Edge, you know, Edge off the show for a period of time, you're like, man, there's a noticeable difference. Or a Jericho or a Michaels, who we haven't even talked about the retirement of Shawn Michaels yet, but we'll get into that. But you know what I mean? It would seem like lower card guys, an MVP maybe, where sometimes you're used, sometimes you're not. Would anyone really miss you? And would anyone really be excited when you returned after being gone? Those are guys you're kind of on the cup. You mean the cusp?
Well, I disagree, though. And you know, if you use, and again, MVP, actually MVP right now is probably a good example, where he has been on the show, off the show, on the show, off the show. So if he went to Vince and said, you know, my back's really killing me, I need, you know, a couple or 4 weeks, do you think Vince would care?
No, actually, I don't.
No. And with the, you know, the amount of times they've pulled the rug underneath the poor guy and killed his push and buried it, he doesn't have a spot to lose. But realistically speaking, it's not like there is a ton of guys in developmental that are ready. You know, they're really trying. So when he came back, I'm quite sure they would, oh, hey, MVP's back. We can give him a fresh start, and he'd get to try his latest mid-card push.
But do you think that Vince would perhaps be a little, I mean, obviously he would say sure, but do you think that maybe he would look at this guy a little differently? Like, why are you, of all people, MVP? You know, why do you need time off for an injury?
Well, if he's been working a full-time road schedule, and you can't do it all the time because you're going to get labeled as the guy who's not durable enough. You don't want to be taking 4 weeks off every third month. But if he's never had time off and he just goes to the trainer, the doctor, with my back's really bad, and the trainer goes, yeah, you've got a back issue, you know, you need it done, he'd give you the time. I know the one time my lower back was bothering me, and Vince saw me limping backstage. He's like, you all right? We need to get you looked at. How are you doing? If you need any time off, just let me know. And I think at the time, I might have even just been on the tail end of my tag team title run with William Regal. Mm-hmm. I guess I would have been with Val probably at that point because Regal was off with his health issues. But, you know, Vince was, you know, if you need time, let me know. Anything you need, let me know. And, you know, I was certainly higher on the card then than MVP is now. But as far as I wasn't figured in, I think Vince genuinely wants guys to be healthy. Now, if you're going to him two or three times in a year looking for that time off, he's probably going to label you as a guy that's either too soft, looking for too much time off, or injury prone.
Yeah.
And then it could cost you your job. But if you're looking for time off three times a year, you probably are injury prone and maybe should be looking at a different line of work.
What were your thoughts on Jack Swagger winning the title?
I was extremely surprised, to say the least.
Yeah.
Because I was just on the heels of going, man, I can't believe that the title switches so much. You know, Chris Jericho is a 6 or 7-time world champion. Edge is, I don't know, he might be an 8-time champion, I think I heard them say. And I was just dumbfounded because when I was a fan, you know, getting a world title, it's like it was a very elite group that got to say they were world champ. And there's a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that have never held the world title. And I don't see Jack Swagger as being in the top five on either brand at this point. And again, they've decided to try and give him a go. I'm certainly going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But it just seemed to be such a huge leap from losing comedic battle royals to Santino.
Yeah.
To he's the world champ. They're going to have to find some way, unless he just loses it fairly quickly. It's like if they want to make him a credible world champ, they got a lot of work to do.
We're going to head to a break. We're going to talk more about Jack Swagger when we come back. And yes, we will talk about the retirement of Shawn Michaels. He's done. He's done. At least for the time being. Talk about how those things go and much, much more. Your email questions as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com. You're talking the title win of Jack Swagger and the retirement of Shawn Michaels. And a lot of other news as well, your email questions. And no phone calls this week. We've got too much news. We were off last week for Mania Weekend, and we're back here to try to catch up. And Jack Swagger, champion, it was a surprise. But at the same time, it was situation where they gave him the Money in the Bank briefcase for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I've got a pretty good idea of what went down, and I think this was one of those changes where Drew McIntyre was likely going to win the briefcase, and one of those deals where, well, everyone knows, you know, we can make this change on the show and ain't gonna make any difference, so we'll give it to Jack Swagger. But regardless, once he had it, it's almost like he had to win it because they've got the Money in the Bank pay-per-view coming up, and you kind of have to get over that getting the briefcase is a big deal. Now, there is, I mean, at some point, someone's got to win the briefcase and not win the title. It seems like, I don't know. I mean, do you agree? Should there come the time, or should the guys always get the title shot
I think there needs to come a time because I am just about to the point now where this concept has jumped the shark with me in that it seems like a lottery to a world championship. And to me, it's getting to the point now where it could be damaging the whole concept and the credibility of the world title in that here's 10 dudes in this wacky ladder match that really is a crapshoot. It's just whoever gets lucky on that day wins this briefcase. And he could just basically cash it in anytime he wants and walk away with the world title. And And it's not just because it's Swagger and it's such a big jump from where he was pushed a month ago. But with Swagger doing it and whoever did it the year before, who did it the year before? Was that Punk's second time last year?
I think Punk was two in a row, yeah.
Yeah. And
that's right, because I was disappointed he didn't make it in the third time this year because he had the Ray thing.
But it just gets to the point with you get the briefcase and it's almost the give me the world title for free briefcase. And with them going with a concept pay-per-view behind it now, I'm starting, especially when there's going to be two this year, it just feels like it diminishes the world title by giving somebody a free lottery card to the world title. Where if someone loses, at least then it's not going to be, I've won the briefcase, I'm going to be world champion whenever I cash this thing in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, as noted, there is a Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and that one's interesting because Money in the Bank is a chance now, or it was until last week. It's always been like, you've got WrestleMania, you've got a bunch of mid-carders that don't have a program. This is a way to get them on the card. This is a way to elevate one guy. But as a main event of a pay-per-view, I mean, let's look at some of the guys that were in this Money in the Bank. Matt Hardy, Evan Bourne, Jack Swagger,
Dolph Ziggler.
You know what I mean? You're going to headline? You're going to headline a pay-per-view with this match, with these guys. That seems to be pushing it.
Yeah, and if they put, you know, the Dave Bautistas and the
Hunter,
those are some pretty big bodies that you don't want to gamble in a match like this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's horrible to say, but you know, if Evan Bourne got injured and needed a month off, the WWE creative team wouldn't lose sleep over it.
Sure.
It sounds awful, and they don't want the guy to get hurt, don't get me wrong, but it's not going to ruin anybody's month from a creative meeting standpoint. But if Hunter or Dave blow out a knee in a crazy ladder match, you're obviously going to have, you know, creative upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, those bodies aren't going to be as exciting in a ladder match as the Dolph Ziggler's and Evan Bourne's of the world. So it's really going to be interesting how they do it.
Well, not only that, but Money in the Bank is like, this is your chance as a mid-card geek to get a title shot anytime you want and win. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't like the mid-card geek, but yeah,
well,
it is.
Well, you know what I mean, but you're not Hunter, you're not Cena. I mean, those guys regularly get championship matches.
Yeah, there's the concept of you're going to risk your life in this incredibly dangerous match for the opportunity of a lifetime.
That you would not normally get.
Yeah, and it's not an opportunity of a lifetime for Triple H, it's an opportunity of, you know, this month or next.
Sure.
Because he's had, you know, what, 12 title reigns now and probably, you know, 25 or more big pay-per-view title shots.
Yeah. So the idea of like Hunter running around with a briefcase, it's absurd.
That and Hunter risking his life in a dangerous stunt match to earn a title shot.
Yeah. Just it I don't know. We'll see. I mean, maybe it'll work. I mean, maybe Money in the Bank, it's called Money in the Bank, but they'll headline with a championship match. Who knows?
Could be. And I think also too, I think the Swagger thing being so quick, it hurt the concept, and maybe that's why I think it's jumped the shark a bit this time, in that before, you know, when CM Punk did it the first time, the fact that he did, you know, however many months he had it, where he was on TV every week coming out, I'm Money in the Bank, it sort of was, when he won the briefcase, was the start of an 8-month push to his world title reign, where Jack Swagger's push started on Sunday, and he's world champion on Friday.
Actually, I think you're thinking Edge, because Punk, I thought, won it in like the spring or early summer. After winning it after...
Okay, but even still, it was more than...
But the Edge one worked exactly like you're saying it, because he cashed it in, and I believe it was right after the Royal Rumble. So he won it at WrestleMania, and he didn't cash it in for 10 months. So when they played his music and he came out with that briefcase, you know, you'd kind of forgotten about it. You saw it, but you'd forgotten about it. But as soon as he came out with it, you were like, oh my God, I forgot. And he won it, and it worked huge. That made Edge for his entire career, that briefcase. And I don't know if it's going to be the same thing for Jack Swagger.
No, because we really only got to see him come out with it twice.
Yeah, the first time he tried to cash it in.
He tried to cash it in the first time and it didn't work. And he looked like a little bit of a tool.
Yes.
He was the goofy guy trying to win the lottery and then screwed up and said, oh, no, I want a mulligan. And then he came out this time and won. So I think he hadn't benefited from I'm the Money in the Bank guy. I'm important here.
Yeah.
He needed a few more months with it to get him to that level where it wouldn't be such a huge jump getting to world championship. But unfortunately, with the Money in the Bank pay-per-view down the road, they probably want to get this one out of the way so we don't go, you know, the day after Jack cashes it in, we do the next pay-per-view for Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he missed out on a lot of a push with, I'm the Money in the Bank guy, I'm the Money in the Bank guy. And had they pushed him and got him other wins with, boy, this guy's really great, he just beat, you know, Drew McIntyre. This guy's really great, he just beat, you know, Chris Jericho, whoever he's going to beat, that when he finally does cash it in, you're start of accepting him more as a main event player.
You know, you can do too is obviously at some point, I mean, someone has to fail. And I think the best way to do it is you've got to have a repeat winner fail. Because that way you at least know he failed this time, but he's not a complete loser. And actually, Jack Swagger would be a good one, because if Jack Swagger won, probably too early this year, but if Swagger, for example, won the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and he tried the same BS where, hey, you know, I'm going to run out, oh, I changed my mind, or and then finally he thinks this is the real time, but it was the wrong time, and he gets screwed and he loses. I mean, at least, you know, he's got a track record of having succeeded and having been a champion for a while. So I don't think it'd be such a big deal. I think if, like, you gave it to Drew McIntyre and it was the first time he'd ever won Money in the Bank and then he goes and immediately fails, that I think I think that's too much of a burial for the guy.
You're the only guy that failed.
Yeah, you're
failed.
The only fool. The only guy that's so bad that you could not win the title with the Money in the Bank briefcase. So let's talk about Shawn's retirement. It's really weird. I mentioned this in the newsletter this week, and it's now a week later. Shawn Michaels was, like, pretty much my favorite wrestler of all time. You know, him, Ric Flair, Bret Hart, long time ago. But, I mean, just, he was so great. You see him on TV every week. He's always having these great matches. I just watched him have an awesome match at WrestleMania. I mean, he's retired for the time being. I mean, maybe he's going to come back at some point. But it's like, it has now been almost a week. It has been a week. It's like, it hasn't hit me. Like, I don't know. I just figure, like, there's going to be a Raw in, like, 6 weeks that just sucks. And it's suddenly going to hit me that, my God, Shawn's gone. You know what I mean? It's weird because it's this is not a BS retirement. I mean, it may end up being. But as of the time it occurred, this is the real deal. And for some reason, I don't know. It's really weird.
Well, I think it hasn't sunk in because he hasn't actually missed a show yet.
That's true.
He was on Raw, so tomorrow is when we're supposed to see him again.
Yeah.
So when he's not on that show, and provided they don't have another Shawn Michaels video package, which there probably will be because they're still hawking the DVD, but when you have a couple shows where you don't see Shawn at all.
Yeah.
And like you say, if it ends up being a crappy Raw where there just wasn't that Shawn Michaels match that saved the show, and, you know, how many of those have there been? You know, hundreds. Because, you know, the guy is really great. And I love the concept of somebody going out while he's still great.
Yes.
And he could probably come back in 5 years and still be great, but the fact that he still had the best match on the show the last time he worked,
yeah,
you know, it's something that he can really take pride in, rather than, you know, that he's going to come back and he's going to be really fat and out of shape and at 55 having a crappy match on the show. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
And he has been so fantastic, and the match was fantastic. But yeah, in a few weeks when he's not on the show and the quality of the show goes down because the guy's great, I think everybody's going to miss him.
It was a great match at WrestleMania. It was a really, really, really good match. And it's just kind of just really ironic and sad that, I guess not really sad because it is what it is, but I mean, the careers of Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, I mean, like I said, among my top two favorite wrestlers of all time, and they both have their final match on the exact same day, and one was by far the best match on the show, and the other was like the worst match of his career. It's astounding when you think about it. We're actually going to head to a break here, but I'm going to get Lance's thoughts on that when we get back. We'll talk about the ROH pay-per-view as well. Promise we talk about that, so we'll get into it. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but we'll talk about some of the top matches there. It's coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com, here for the next 20 minutes or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. Tons of free stuff up there. We got TV reports, got the Raw report coming up tomorrow. We got radio shows. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page at WrestlingObserver.com. There's a list of the latest five free radio shows. That'll get you going for a day or two. And if you enjoy what you hear, consider signing up. It's $10.99 a month. All the news and information is noted in audio form. If you've got a long commute, if you like to work out at the gym and listen to stuff, man, we've got not only new episodes of our radio shows every single day, but we've got an archive dating back to 2005. Literally hundreds and hundreds of radio shows available for you to download at any time. And it's pretty ridiculous, actually, how much content is up there. So head to WrestlingObserver.com. If you like what you hear, check it out, sign up, and you will never be at a loss for audio once you check that out. And, of course, if you want to train to become a pro wrestler, Storm Wrestling Academy is the place to go. You get in the ring with Lance. You get to pick this dude up and powerbomb him. I saw this with my own eyes. It's completely ridiculous. But Lance gets in there. He risks his life for you. So if you want to become a pro wrestler, no better place to go than Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and train with Lance Storm. StormWrestling.com is the place to go. And Lance, we were talking during the break about the Undertaker-Shawn Michaels match, and the best part about that match.
Yeah, and you might not have been able to see it being there live because you're a lot further away, but when you've got the cameras in there, to me, the thing that made that match fantastic and not just really great was their facial expressions and the emotion they can translate with their face. Taker's phenomenal, Shawn's fantastic, but the times that they were doing nothing was when they were at their best. You know, just the emotion of the finish when Shawn kicked out of, I guess it was the one tombstone, and Taker's just facial expressions of just being completely dumbfounded. And when he got up and sort of looked at him with the, you know, I think he even said it, you know, just stay down. Like, you believed he actually cared. It's like he had so much respect for Shawn at that moment, he didn't want to have to kill him to beat him. And you could just feel the emotion. And
it actually played off Shawn and Flair in their career match.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And it was just so fantastic. And it's those moments in wrestling where you can watch it and you get goosebumps. And it's like, that's where the magic is. That's where you can believe it. And unless you've got the kind of experience and are talented like Shawn and Taker are, to translate that emotion where you know what they're thinking just by the look on their face. And it's not just moves and it's not just spots. And some of the greatest, you know, technically sound wrestlers or workers or spot guys, they could go out and do that exact match physically, but it would never be as good because they just have that emotion and that translation that just makes it fantastic.
It's funny you mention that because you met my buddy Craig. You noted he's a huge man. And when we first started wrestling in the late 90s, it started right around the same time, and we did matches together, and so we were always looking for, like, what matches could we emulate here? Because I'm a small man, he's a big man. So, of course, we chose, what else? Shawn Michaels versus Vader.
Jeez.
And, you know, we wrote down every move, move for move.
You're such marks.
Well, we would just, well, because we didn't know how to work. You know what I mean? Because I never went to, like, a traditional wrestling school. I had never had anybody tell me what the hell I was supposed to be doing. And, like, the first guy I ever worked regularly with was a guy named Nick, and that's what he did. He would go home and he would watch a Ricky Steamboat match with somebody. He'd write it down move for move. He'd make me memorize my part, and we'd go out there and we'd do it. I had absolutely no idea. So, of course, Craig and I recreate this Michaels Vader match. And it's, like, not even in the same universe. But that was when I first realized that, huh, it's more than the moves. You know what I mean? It's a trial by fire, but it's you mentioned it today at the thing, too. You know, take any two wrestlers, have them go out there and recreate Michaels and Undertaker move for move, and it's not going to mean a thing.
No.
It's just not going to. No. And I also thought on the flip side, I remember watching, I forget what match it was, but, you know, I thought, could these guys actually have a bad match? It was like Angle and Benoit or something like that. It was some, you know, they had this fantastic match, and I just thought, these guys are like so good at what they do that I think if you offered them $1 million to go out and have a bad match, I just don't think that they could do it. You know what I mean? Because everything is so deeply ingrained in them that even trying to be bad, there would be good stuff about it.
Yeah, unless they actually purposely tried to blow spots and do comedic gaga, although they'd probably do that enough that it would still be better than most matches you see.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much talent and habit that some of it's going to be good. But I don't think from a professional level that, you know, they would be able to purposely try to have a bad match. They just,
yeah.
It's... You know, it's like asking Picasso to do a bad painting. It just can't be done.
You could throw a bunch of stuff on the canvas, but if it had Picasso's name, that thing would sell.
It'd still sell.
You just know. So yeah, Shawn Michaels is great, everybody. That's the conclusion we've all come to this week.
In case you weren't aware, Shawn Michaels and Undertaker are really great.
In case we needed stats, we've got some of those in the Observer as well, for those of you interested in that. But let's talk a little bit about the ROH pay-per-view. I have not gotten a chance to watch this yet. We were at the Tulalip show, and so I'm going to try and get a chance to check it out on GoFightLive.tv. I think you can probably still go up and buy a replay of it. We did get some... we got various reports. Basically, show quality. We heard very, very good show. So that's a positive. We heard the audio was really bad. Like, the commentators could barely be heard. I had people that emailed that said they emailed Go Fight Live, and Go Fight Live blamed it on ROH, and I haven't heard from anybody from ROH, but I bet they'll blame it on Go Fight Live, so who knows? But there were apparently some audio issues, but wrestling-wise, apparently very good. Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli won the tag titles from Mark and Jay Briscoe in a 30-minute match. Hero hit Jay with the loaded elbow pad, so tag team title change there. And cheap plug, by the way, if you've not got a chance yet, head to Figure 4 Daily at WrestlingObserver.com. We had Jay Briscoe on our show this week, and God, he was great. Just, that is a money show right there.
It's not a gimmick, people. He really is that crazy redneck.
Yes, that's the guy. We should have actually, you know what? God, we should have asked Semper Vivi about this, because he lives in Delaware. And I was asking Jay about... I can't remember how I worded it. It was probably a little more delicate, but I kind of just asked, you know, is everyone there like you? He said yes, but he's basically specified that Lower Delaware and Upper Delaware are just two completely different places. So I should have asked Mike about that. We'll do that next week. But Cassandro broke a leg in a match with Rhett Titus. Did a tope, broke his leg, continued the match and won. Went to the hospital.
Wow.
Apparently still there as of last night. Chris Daniels returned, and he set up a match with Davey Richards. He's going to be doing the shows the first weekend of May. So that's interesting.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. He's using the Fallen Angel name and talked about being held back. We don't know if that means he's done with TNA or what the situation is here. It's actually really interesting because obviously he couldn't do ROH or TNA guys can't do ROH TV or pay-per-view, but what about internet pay-per-view? I would think it would be the same thing, but who knows? We had Tyler Black beating Austin Aries and Roderick Strong in the three-way to retain the title. 31 and a half minutes. Apparently a fantastic match. And that one, I saw the preview kind of that they did, the ROH shows in Phoenix. And both those shows, by the way, were very, very good. And the Dragon Gate show, fabulous main event, the Dragon Gate six-man on that show. Those were all fun live. We'll talk about those on different shows. Don't have time here today. But other notes from the pay-per-view here. There was a Lucha tag, Blue Demon Jr. and Magno against Super Parka and Mysterioso, which apparently the fans got into, but I got reports here that it wasn't all that great a match. And Necro Butcher beat Eric Stevens. Get this, Lance. Butcher's rules. He won with an O'Connor roll.
Tremendous.
Necro Butcher is just like the... He's so awesome.
I remember there was a TV taping in Boston once where JBL actually did the Mahistra roll-up. This was in his APA days. And he come back just laughing at him. Like, that was awesome. JBL doing Lucha.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, Necro is he is what he is.
He's Necro.
Yeah, and we've actually had him on the show. If you go in the archives, you can hear the show with him. It's amazing. It's just amazing. But, you know, we've asked other people who've worked with him, and you know, it's like, you know, you took this thing off the apron through a ladder, and you know, why'd you do this? And, you know, they just basically are like, Necro's just such a nice guy. He'll take anything, and you feel bad when you have a match with him. He's like, he wants to put you through this ladder, and you're just like, oh, man, this guy took everything, so what the hell? But yeah, that sounds great. O'Connor roll for the finish right there in the Necro Butcher match. But anyway, apparently a good pay-per-view, so make sure you check that one out. And I suppose before we wrap this segment up here, we should talk a little bit about the Impact rating this past Monday. Show dropped all the way to a 0.6, Lance. And I guess it actually tells you something that in the final 10 minutes of this program, we've waited this long to talk about it. It's just sad now.
It is. And I just really hope they give up the head-to-head battle. I guess they're going to 8 o'clock. The one, is it next? No, 2 weeks from now.
No, Christ, it's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so they're doomed.
Yeah, that's not going to help. I still wish they'd just stay on Thursday and put out a show that I know they could do because they've got so much talent. But it's been the same type of thing, and viewership's going down, which is never a good thing.
No, the idea in tomorrow is, you know, January 4th, the 8 to 9 hour was the highest rating they'd ever done of all time. And so it's basically an experiment. Well, let's see what happens if we go 8 to 10 this coming Monday. Problem is they've had a week to promote it. And as much as they promoted it on Impact this week, you didn't remember. And I don't know if I'm going to remember on Monday. I mean, I know right now, but I don't know how many times I've previewed 3-hour Raws and 5 o'clock comes on the West Coast and just skips my mind.
Well, it really is bad timing, too, in that there's just with Mania and Shawn's retirement and everything else, there's so much else going on. Are you really going to remember, oh, right, 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
Where if it was 2 or 3 weeks from now and Raw is just in that, you know, 3 weeks after Mania, you know, no one really cares, nothing big going on, maybe the head news story would be 8 o'clock Impact. But I think, unfortunately, at about probably 10 to 9, people go, oh, crap, it started at 8. And yep, those first 3 quarter hours could be really bad.
It's just a battle for me right now to try to remember this. And if you look at the Raw, when Raw goes 3 hours, the 8 to 9 hour is always down like at least 20% from the 9 to 11. So if you look at the show this week doing a 0.6, if that first hour is down 20%, they're doing a 0.5 this week.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but
I don't either, but I never thought a 0.6 was going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not expecting the big, you know, 1.4 or whatever, 1.5 that they got in the 8 o'clock hour before, so It's going to be interesting, and I hope it does well. At least get it up to maybe a 1 in the unopposed hour, which would be a huge improvement. But I don't know.
What a win that would be, a 1. This is the lowest rating since they were doing Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Everybody, Monday night wars here.
Yeah, and how much has their budget gone up since then?
Actually, that's a question. We'll do one email question after the break. We're going to head to the break right now. We'll be back, and we'll do that email question. We'll do a final preview of Monday night and wrap it up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Lance Storm of StormWrestling.com. We've got a question here very quickly on the subject of TNA. Matthew says, how much money do they have? How much do they actually put into TNA? I think at this point they've lost probably around $35 million since they opened up in 2002. I know that Panda has revenues listed of $14 million a year annually. And if you think about WWE at their $500 million a year, I mean, this is not a billion-dollar company running TNA. They're doing $14 million a year. That does not mean, I mean, we don't know how much they've got. You know what I mean? Maybe they've got $1 billion, but they're only making $14 million a year. We don't know. But they've put a lot of money in, and they seem fine putting more in.
Well, I think, too, though, before, I don't know how much money that's cost them with, you know, Hogan and Bischoff, but I think before that, I don't think they were losing a lot of money. I think they were getting close to the break even, or maybe even making slightly bit of money with, you know, some of the merchandising deals and overseas stuff that they're getting, I guess. But at least they were getting to the point where, you know, they weren't necessarily leaking money anymore. But I don't know what kind of money, you know, the Hogan and Bischoff project cost them. So that's really the big question, that if that was a multi-million dollar bump in their budget and their ratings have gone down and pay-per-view buy rates, who knows yet, then, yeah, it could be a big step backward. But they certainly weren't losing, like, you know, millions of dollars a year up until, I think, last year. I think they'd finally got things under control where the revenue was starting to at least balance out with the expenses, which is a good thing.
We are completely out of time, everybody. Lance, thanks again for doing the show today, and thanks for coming all the way down here to Seattle. It was a great weekend. We'll talk more about it Thursday on the show, Figure Four Daily. It's up at WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, head up there right now. Check out the free radio shows on the right-hand side of the page. If you like what you hear, sign up. You'll get audio content like this every single day. So thanks again, everybody. Tomorrow, Raw versus Nitro. Oops, Impact. Great way to end the show. Raw versus Impact tomorrow, everybody. We'll be covering it on the site. And we'll talk to you again next week. You listen to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.